Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Brennan Carnan. Well, this S&P futures up 29. NASDAQ futures up 99. As the rally appears to be continuing. Yesterday's rally after a bad week last week. Up and down, we're violent within this range. It's really, it's amazing. We got gold and silver coming down, but we got GameStop. We got the actual number here where it's trading.
Didn't that lose like a third of its value yesterday?
Yeah, we'll get the real number here. It's down another $80 today, so it's at 145, down from, what was the top tick, Matty, 518?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, last Thursday morning before the show. Thursday, it must have been Thursday because Frank was in. And, so now it's down to one. I mean, once in a while, Brendan, I get to be correct. On Thursday morning, I said, at this price, the risk is on the part of the longs, not the shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
And right you are.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, though, Brendan, you couldn't do anything because, I'll give you an example. I'll get this thing up here. Here we are at 143 down $80. The 100 puts last night were like $9. So I mean, it's hard to buy the 100 puts 4 days out when the stock is trading, 240 or 220 and, pay $9 for them. So even if you thought it was going to happen, if somebody was lucky enough to be long the stock, yeah, you'd find a way to sell calls against it or do something, but the calls and the puts were, This was a real advantage the last week or so, because I have some people that were obviously calling me and some other advisors that I help out when it comes to options. And some guys had some stocks that went from like $5 to 18 or 20, and the 25 calls are trading for like $6. I go, God, sell them. I mean, it's like, would you be happy being out at 31? Well, yeah, well, then sell those calls for God's sake. If you already happen to be long the stock and didn't just want to plain sell it, you could get a lot of money from selling calls. I mean, the puts were incredibly expensive. But just to give you an idea, some people, there's one stock here. We had some thing. Was it BB? Was this BB? We were trying. We never got anything, of course, because it was very difficult to get some execution. But I think people were trying to buy the. Wasn't this one, but the stock's trading like 25, and somebody bought like 11,000 of the, like the 38 calls or something. No, this one, BB. Somebody bought the 38 calls out like a week or so. I'm like, you did what? Stock's trading 13. I mean, on the 19th, somebody bought the 38 calls, like 11,000 of them. What are you doing? I mean, they paid 90 some cents for them, and 10 minutes later, there were 60. That's a real number. And I try to do a butterfly out there for nothing. Because one thing you can do is, well, if you get the execution, is the volatility is real high. Nobody knows where the stock's going to land. So if you even have any kind of a suspicion, you can do a butterfly, which is a safe position where say you buy a 30 call, you sell two 35s, and you buy a 40. So obviously it's worth $5 right at 35. But, it's margin just as a, you don't have to margin the long or the short side. You just pay for the butterfly. It's one option spread that you actually get break from the margin. So, but you have to do three sides. You got to pay three commissions. I mean, there's downsides to it. But bottom line is, if you think it's going up at 35 or you want to sell premium, sell premium doesn't mean getting cash in. It means There's a, I'm getting way too technical here, Brennan, so kick me. There's only like really two kinds of option positions in the world, despite what all the sayers tell you. You could have positions in every single strike, but at the end of the day, when you look at your graph of your position, there's either a position where movement helps you and time decay hurts you, okay, or there's a position where time decay helps you and movement hurts you. It's one of those two, all right, or else it's nothing, one or the other. It's an interest rate play or something. So if you have a stock that's $35 and you think, well, it's going to stay right here at 35, you can sell the 35 call and put, which is probably the most risky way of doing it, probably the most profitable if it works, but the operative word there being if, plus we'd never let you do it here. That way, it's called selling a straddle, all right? But so time decay, you're taking money in, and and you've got time working in your way, but you could actually buy, say, the 30, 35, 40 butterfly, where time is working your way, but you paid for it. So don't get into the trap where if you pay for something, that somehow time's working against you. It doesn't have to be that way. Is that way too technical or no?
I would never get into that trap, Chief, because I'd have a weed whacker a long time ago. Maddie, you got a weed whacker over there to start moving in here?
You sound like my uncle. I bought Northern Tissue in the crash, got wiped out. You know, just saying. But
interesting lesson, Chief. But I think you're in the weeds.
Okay. Too technical, Maddie?
Well, everyone's asleep. But
well, once in a while, we are stacks and jacks. I got to say something, right?
That's why I let you go. That's why I let you do your thing and educate the world.
But that's it for the day, right? On the options. But now are you going to be the male Elizabeth Warren? There ought to be an investigation, even though you don't know what you're investigating.
I'm just going to turn it over to you. I'm going to appoint you as my SEC czar for investigations on matters like this.
Is it possible for you to run around, and now that you're retired, with like a water balloon? I'm not going to say a shotgun. It's way too bad. A water balloon, and every time somebody says something stupid like the regulation didn't work, we need more regulation, you blast them in a water balloon.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we've had this discussion before about what's the idea of the government. Is it trying to anticipate or retaliate for wide variances in the market? Take GameStop. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Does it need to be regulated or not? Is it an abuse? And if it's an abuse, who investigates? And what are the potential penalties? If they can't investigate, should there be more rules or regulations? It's an interesting argument because, you know, a lot of the stuff from the SEC was brought about because of the Great Depression and the stock market crash of 1929. It was, and many times you would say it was an overreaction to what happened in the market.
Stuff that has made its way through from the original 33 and 34 Act, there's not a whole lot in there you can disagree with, Brendan, and most of that stuff has made its way through.
No, I'm agreeing with that. I do agree with that. What I'm saying is that usually laws are put are developed and passed in response to a crisis of some sort, and oftentimes that regulation goes too far in the opposite direction. It needs to be corrected and then pulled back.
Well, it always affects people that never did anything bad.
Yeah, oftentimes it can't. Again, I go back to something we learned in law school very early, that bad facts make bad laws. And when you've got a very bad fact pattern, particularly in this heightened age of polarization and partisanship, bad facts give a lot of credence to the other side to overreact, whether it's for more regulation or less regulation. Bad situations make the argument for the other side.
Well, I think when you look at what really came out of, boy, I used to know this stuff stone cold, but the 33 and 34 Act, there's not anything there in the terms of regulation that you can really bitch about. I mean, it had to do with disclosure. It had to do with audited financial sheets. It had to do with annual reports, because before that, banks that were selling you stocks, they knew people's balance sheets and you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had to do with registrations and people knowing who the people were in the company they were buying and things like that. It, It really didn't have anything to do with price or anything like that. I mean, my whole bitch about this whole thing is that when you have a free market, the more you can keep it competitive and the more you can keep it free, the less you have to regulate. You only really have
that's true.
You only really have to regulate the outliers. You only really have to make the simple rules. Now, my concern in this GameStop thing is if, I mean, I know I've said this every day, but this is part of the game and everybody wants to know about it. I mean, if there are rules for short selling, I wonder if everybody followed the rules, how the hell it got to be 130% of the float.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is somebody somewhere didn't follow the rules.
Or somebody found a loophole in the rules.
Well, and when I look at what we have to do to sell short for somebody, it's incredulous to me that somebody, given all the reporting and things that we do and the clearing firm does, it's incredulous to me because what you end up doing, Brendan, and I'll say this flat out. I mean, I don't give a crap who's listening. What you end up with, the more regulation you get, the more you beat the crap out of PTI and the big guys do whatever they damn well please, no matter what the regulations are. So as long as you're going to do that, you might as well leave us alone. I mean,
that always goes back to the argument of being too big to fail. When you get to a certain size, you can do pretty much anything you want. That's one of the big arguments.
Well, when they were, what the hell was a big number? It was 95 plus 400 brown bears. When there was 1,300 people on the floor of the CBOE and somebody tapped out, other than them being your friend and you felt sorry for them, the market didn't care. Now, what exactly has to happen for Citadel to be taken out of this business? I'm not saying they deserve it. I'm not saying they did anything wrong. But they're what? They're 40%, 50% of the flow? They're 60, they were there. I think it was, what was the number the other day somebody sent us? They're 50-some percent of Robinhood's flow? I mean, what has to happen for on a Thursday you say Citadel can't play today?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you get to that thing, man, that's why these regulators, I mean, you know, the whole Janet Yellen thing, I don't want to go through that again, but I you know what, Brendan? Her being, getting that position has absolutely caused me to lose total faith in any improvement in this country. Any improvement whatsoever. Her getting that job. And there's no coming back for me. I mean, I still love doing the show. I still love doing my, plus the last week or two, been very interesting. But all the stuff we talk about on this show, about maybe, if we talk to the right people and talk about putting some morals back in the world, it's gone. It's gone, Brendan. It's gone. The lady got $7 million from the people she was supposed to regulate, and she got another government job, even more important. What is wrong with these people? Are they totally amoral?
I understand your frustration, but I do have to challenge your theory that she should not get another job because she got $7 million in the time that she was out of government, because at that time there was no guarantee. She wasn't even on the horizon for another appointment, so she is entitled to that. I mean,
why?
That's a free market enterprise type
why?
Of thing.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because she left her government position, she left her chairmanship, and wanted to work. People were willing to pay her.
Brennan,
there was no expectation when they paid her that she was going to go back in as a Treasury Secretary.
You're a brilliant man. I honestly believe that. But to be blunt, you've got this faith in people that somehow it's been beaten out of me. I mean, I have faith in all my friends. What makes you think, I'm asking this straight out, what makes you think that the money she got from these people wasn't for stuff she didn't do in her last job?
I don't know who paid her.
I'll tell you who paid her. Everybody she was supposed to regulate, virtually every bank, every firm, Goldman Sachs, all those people, and her going rate was about $50,000 to $60,000. Yet the Citadel stop was 221. Either, I want to be accurate with this, either UBS or HBC, either one of those gave her two something, and some other bank in Germany gave her two something. So three people in an article I read paid her four times the rate. Now, what are they paying for? Well, I mean, I jumped to the conclusion, like you, that how can she regulate these people going forward? Okay, and that's bad enough. But that you're saying, okay, yeah, she had a right to make a living. What makes you think it wasn't a payoff for what she didn't do when she was there?
Well, I don't have any evidence of that either way. So I don't know. I can't argue
Brendan,
that
it stinks.
Point.
It stinks. I have spoke. My job was to regulate Merrill Lynch for 8 years, and the minute I get out, Merrill Lynch was not one of them. They might have paid it a regular rate. And the minute I get out, I come by for an hour, and they give me $250,000. God, Brendan, it stinks.
Yeah, but you're worth $250,000, Chief. You're worth probably twice that amount.
But I'm saying I would never do that. It just looks terrible.
Yes, it does look terrible. Well, it looks terrible now because she's been appointed as Treasury Secretary. I don't know that it looks as bad when she's just as a consultant or as a speech giver,
right,
with nothing on the horizon.
Brandon, I could care less.
She's saving them again.
I could care less if she goes to universities. I could care less if she goes to 3M. I don't care if she goes to General Motors. But to go to the places that her job was to regulate, Brendan, you can't tell me there's something right about that. You just can't. I'd never argue with you, but for God's sake, I mean, why?
Yes, you would. You argue with me every week.
But I'm saying it's a list of everybody she's supposed to regulate that she went and got money from after she got out of the job. I mean, you're making the assumption that that was all water under the dam. I guess my question is why.
Because I don't have much information. I mean, all I know about this. I mean, I haven't even seen the list of places where she's taught. You could be totally right in all this, and your assumptions could be right. And if I had more information about like what you're reading, I might jump to the same conclusions. All I'm saying is that I don't, and I don't have that viewpoint right now.
Well, I tell you what, I am the biggest Luddite there is. But our friend Maddie Weber. Maddie, Google Janet Yellen speaking fees, and the top 10 firms will pop up in red lights right on the page.
All right, I'll do that in a little bit.
But I mean,
we'll talk about that more next week.
But I guess what I'm saying, right? I'm not. It's not up to me to constantly accuse people. But isn't there anybody else? Do we have to go down that road and say, okay, I'm going to make the leap of faith that you didn't get any of this money for what you didn't do in the past? Okay, but why? Why don't I give you the job? You haven't been paid off by people. At least you'll do a fair job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why does it have to be her? I
can't answer your question. I can't answer your question as to why people are on the circuit. There are certain people who are on the circuit that get paid big bucks. And you know, I agree with you that it seems like a lot of money. But in the circles of, you know, people who speak at Davos, people who speak at Citicorp, people who speak at J.P. Morgan, often get big money. That's their budget, and they invite high-level people with big reputations to speak and pay them a lot of money. Even if the content is no different from a speech that you would give or that I would give or that Manny would give.
Do you think it would
their budget is such.
Do you think it would be okay for a former police superintendent to get 50 grand to go talk to a street gang?
Do I think it would be what? Appropriate?
Appropriate. After you get out of office.
Well, let me say this. If that fee were being paid by J.P. Morgan or Goldman Sachs, then yes. If that were being paid, if that was what the former superintendent said he wants to charge to a grassroots organization in North Lawndale who's working with street gangs, then no.
I don't know where we've gotten from, how far we've gone. And by the way, I'm not. The question: once you get down this road, how do you stop? I mean,
it's a tough road. But let me put it in perspective from the speaker's angle. When somebody is looking to be hired as a speaker, you can approach it a couple of different ways. You can say, my fee for giving a keynote speech. You're having a global retreat for Goldman Sachs. So whatever my topic happens to be, my speech for Goldman Sachs for a keynote speech is, pick a number, $50,000. And Goldman Sachs says, well, if you're only charging $50,000, you can't be that good. Our normal budget for our speakers is $250,000. So we're not going to hire you at $50,000 because you're too cheap. Same $50,000, you go to Citicorp, for example. They don't pay their speakers, but again, just for purpose of example, you go to something like a Citicorp or a Rotary Club and say, my fee's $50,000, they won't even return your phone call because you're so out of line. So you've got to look to see what the budget is. And many times speakers will say, before quoting a price for a keynote speech or for a workshop, they'll say, well, what's the budget that you're looking at? What's the budget? What have you paid previous speakers in previous years? That kind of sets the tone. It's not always just like buying widgets at X number of dollars per widget.
Well, actually, I took two classes from him because I really liked listening to the dude, George Stigler. Ended up being a Nobel Prize winner, and he was a behavioral economist, totally different than Milton Friedman. It was much more fun listening to him because you have to sit there scrambling down calculus, which I didn't understand. So he would talk about. They said one guy says, "Can you stop corruption in the city of Chicago?" And he said, "Sure, I could." They said, "How would you do that?" He goes, "Well, first of all, I pay the mayor." At the time, I think. Richard J. was making something like maybe $25,000 a year, something like that. I'm saying this had to be 1975. So he goes, first of all, he's got more employees and he's got a bigger budget than General Motors, right? At the time he did. And he says, the man should be making $1 million a year. And he said, and you should be putting 800 or 900 of it in escrow. And every year, if he proves that he didn't do anything wrong, he gets a bigger chunk of that. And you pay it out over the rest of his life. And if ever he's convicted or anything from something bad, you take it from him. So now maybe Jenny Yellen, actually, when she was head of the Fed, made, I'm going to say, $200,000 a year. And there's probably, I'm going to say there's my guys at the Fed. They've alluded to me that she's nowhere near the highest paid person in the Fed, which is insane. Okay? So if the job is worth $1 million a year, the last thing you want is the people who she's regulating to make up the difference.
I agree with you completely. But here's another analogy. How much is the president of the University of Illinois getting compared to the football coach? Or, better yet, Alabama. What is the president of the University of Alabama getting compared to Saban?
Don't get me started. The highest paid person in virtually every state but three or four is either the football coach
or the basketball coach.
And, of course, now you could be Babe Ruth and say you had a better year than him. Or my buddy Dick Belden, who I haven't seen forever because the club's so few people in the club, said, why would anybody want to live in those other four states? There's a way of looking at it, Brendan.
You're being paid in case of saving, you're being paid to live in Alabama.
Well, and you're, like, the chief of surgery in, like, North Dakota actually makes more than the football coach of, like, the North Dakota, University of North Dakota or something, which you would think would be the right thing to do everywhere, right? But,
well, for two reasons. One, their football program isn't quite as good as, say, Alabama is, but, yes, you need deep brain surgeons.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess, you know, if you can't even say what the morals are, how do you even tell anybody what to do? I've told this story 100 times. The priest I had at Notre Dame for, it was unions and monopolies and those kinds of things. He was an arbitrator and a mediation guy. And he'd head off, and he had a hell of a reputation. I mean, he'd done it for years and years, which is what you have to do to get that kind of reputation. He says, if I go to a town, I pick my own airfare, I stay in some hotel, like, you know, in a Motel 6 or someplace. I don't know if they had those times. And he goes, if I'm sitting there having a burger or a beer at the bar and a free beer comes by, I get on the phone and I say I've been compromised, I'm off the case. I don't think that's necessarily where you need to be. That's probably a scale of 1 to 10. That's about a 12. But once you start, see, the Federal Reserve, Brendan, the thing that bothers me is every time me or my clients have gotten clipped. Now, if you were one of my clients, in 2007, 2008, everybody gets hammered, right? And everybody, and a lot of people lost houses, a lot of people lost this, a lot of people lost a lot of things. And, you know, a lot of people, there's people living in the house, but they're not the same people, right? Yet the Fed is the only person, or maybe the Treasury, that knows where all these money goes. There's a lady I used to have an adult beverage with, the guys would bring her down, and she was like the Chloe of Federal Reserve of Chicago. If there was a money transfer from one bank to another, she knew about it. And one of the brightest ladies, I mean, I'll tell you, I've never, I mean, you didn't want to sit there and talk money flows with this lady. I mean, you felt like you were a third grader. And the only people that knew that a bunch of bleeps were borrowing money in Japan at 2% and feeding the mortgage market here at 6%, and that there were $30 on every dollar of mortgage. If you walk around to anybody, and not you, and say, what was wrong in 2007? Ah, man, all those people, those Mexican people, those people that got mortgages when they shouldn't have. That's what blew it all up. You know what, Brent? Nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing could be further from the truth. There were $30. The only person whose job it was to say, you answered early in the show, I'm finally answering your question. You're supposed to, every time there's a crisis, okay, it's something new, all right? It's people in Argentina borrowing too much money. It's something. The only people that are paid every friggin' day to watch that stuff is the Fed. You and I can't do it. They're not sending us those numbers. That's their job. So whenever they screw it up, I mean, it's like Fauci not knowing that this thing was coming from China. That's what you do all day. That's what you get paid for, right? So so the Fed not knowing that was coming, and they come over and all of a sudden, oh, no, we need more rules for us. Us, what did we do? Well, how would we possibly have known that a lot of these people were borrowing money at 2%, bringing it over here, investing at 6, and not doing the forward back to the – if you actually did the forward transaction for the yen going back, it would cost you the 4%, right? So it's a zero-sum game if you do it right. But if you leave one leg out, you can make money like this for a while. And then the thing blows up, and there's $30 of leverage in every dollar mortgage. Now, that to me is the Fed job. So, yes, they're supposed to be looking for the next crisis, not beating small people up about the last crisis. And now, right now, with this market doing what it's doing, they should be very concerned, the SEC, at having three or four players in the business. Do you think for a second that these trades overnight in GME are not, that there's any kind of bids and offers in there, that anybody's made any kind of markets? You think they even care about that? I mean, that to me would say that these things are unglued. They're not being done right. It's not competitive. There's not enough market makers. There's not enough access to the system for people to be in to provide order flow. How many people other than you and me are bitching about that?
No, I agree with you. And I will use another analogy. I mean, think about back to the days when Barry Bonds was at his height in the steroid era, or Mark McGwire. They were staying one step ahead of the drug testers in Major League Baseball, really all for sports. I mean, you can think about going back to the Olympics. You can think about Major League Baseball, football, whatever sport you want. The drug suppliers and the drug users are staying one step ahead of the testing. The testing is always lagging behind. And I think there's a similar analogy to what you're talking about now with the Fed and what they should be doing now. They're reacting to what happened in the past, trying to catch up with that, rather than predicting the future, because they really can't predict what hasn't happened yet.
By the way, if you see somebody, our softball team needs some of those drugs. Just saying. We're aging a little. We could use some. Brennan, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 31. NASDAQ Futures up 106. We'll be right back. Joel? Joel's with us today, right? I thought he said something last week about us having another guy. No, we must have been before that. We'll have Mr. Joel on Cannon when we come back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Just Brent Weber on the board. Second day of Wally here after the last, probably the last week, but today we're just about everything back as of from last Friday for sure. Probably more so on the S&P. S&P's 3250. NASDAQ futures up 119. Dow futures up 244. So we've got GameStop is down. Where are we at GameStop now? Let me put this up exactly. The thing's moving so fast, man. You got to keep checking it. You can't even just remember what you got here. And now it's down only 72. It's down 80. This thing's gonna have. It's gotta be like a 4 hour wide market. Whatever. People are trading that. God love them. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 159. It's 2 days in a row. These guys are rallying. 1.1%. FTSE only up 0.4%. 29 points. CAC around up 89. 1.6. FTSE's been kind of a laggard there. European growth last year, or lack thereof. GDP was down 6.8% on the year. That's really awful. I mean, that's bad. And we need a big bounce back this year. I don't know. That's not so good. Nikkei up 271. That's a full 1%. Shanghai up 28. That's 0.8%. Hang Seng up 355. That's 1.2%. We've got, some Taiwan shares are up 2%. So, those markets are going up pretty good the last couple of days. Just as a way of review, yesterday, Dow was up 229. S&P was up 59. That's 1.6%. That's a lot. NASDAQ up 332. That's 2.5%. That's like a real lot. Bonds, a 111. So up three basis points. The Bund minus 0.48 now only. It broke through that minus 0.5 number. And Japan is a steady positive 0.05. We've got oil up huge. 2.4% up the Dow 30, 54.85. Ran up 134, 57.69. Natural gas up 11 cents, 296, man. Remember it got down to like 250 whenever we thought it was going to be a mild winter, and now it's getting cold again. This thing's probably going to go through $3. There's been some nice trade in here if you just would have buy at 250, sell at $3 twice in the last year. RBOB up 4 cents, 163. So gas the pumps will be going up as well. Gold, however, not going up. Down $18, 1845. Silver down $1.80, 27.56. Copper down 3 cents, 350. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sport. A lot of stuff there. Wow.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a big issue down on the south side. The Bishop Ford is closed on the inbound side between 130th and 115th. Due to a semi fire, Chief. Apparently a semi that's carrying a load of truck tires burst into flames earlier this morning and has emergency crews on the scene working to get that clear, but that has the inbound Bishop Ford completely blocked right now, so you want to avoid that, if at all possible.
Plus, you don't want to breathe it either.
And you don't want to breathe it. That's our only issue, but it's a big one in the area right now, at least on the area expressways. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Stevenson. Eisenhower looking good. Same for the north side expressways. Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Only other crash is up in the northern suburbs. Route 137 on the eastbound side at Skokie Highway, there is an accident. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, it'll be similar to yesterday. Some sunshine, but temperatures right around freezing. We'll reach a high of 32. Right now it is clear and 24 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a beautiful day, partly cloudy with a high of 80. Right now it's clear and 56. In sports, the Bulls snapped their three-game skid. They beat the Knicks last night 110-102. Suns topped the Mavericks 109-108. And in college hoops, Loyola played Missouri State for the second straight night and blew them out for the second straight night, winning 70-50.
I don't think Missouri State's too good.
I think that's probably true, but Loyola is good this year.
The center's good.
Yeah, he's really good, and they're going to make the tournament, I would imagine, again, and they're a team that no one will want to face.
Are they going to be the second pick in their conference? Because Drake is undefeated.
Right, yeah. So I do think that this year, one of the rare instances that the Missouri Valley has a really good shot at getting two teams in. I think Drake is a lock, unless something, you know, crazy happens in the last month here. And I think Loyola, as long as they don't stumble, and if those two teams kind of meet in their conference tournament, I think they'll both get in.
So do you think one of them will get in ahead of Michigan?
Michigan's looking really good as long as they can get back on the court.
I just Joel just had a grabber when I said that. I know Joel. How are you? how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. Good morning, Matty Ice. Is Sister Jean still around?
Yeah,
she is.
Yeah,
she had her 100th birthday, right?
Yeah, boy, oh boy. I tell you, I'm concerned. I mean, we're going to come back from that layoff 2 weeks. We're not even practicing. You saw what Michigan State did when they didn't play for 18, 20 days. It's just too bad. I just hope we can get our karma back.
Well, as contagious as the disease is and how younger people, you would think that all these people would have it by halfway through the season, but they don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's just college kids and stuff. It's a shame, but the tournament is not too far away. We got the Big Ten tournament. The thing that I'm worried about is if they make them cram in and make up a bunch of games, plus the Big Ten tournament, then going in at five.
Yeah.
Other things to worry about, Chief, for sure.
Well, we have all these vaccines. You would think that in a month or so, a lot of people should be getting them. Especially now if Johnson & Johnson's now got one and everybody else is. It's like four.
Yeah.
It's like four people that have
them. The thing is, the slow on the rollout. Lisa has been, beating down the door, going all the way up to the governor's office, and said, "Hey, we got it. We have it out there. It's just the manpower, the people to deliver the shots. The organization is take. It's we got too late. It's a late start, but the vaccines are out there. We just got to get them delivered."
Joel, we've known this was going to happen. Where are we? We're in February now. I'm going to say last August, when these guys started talking about vaccines by Thanksgiving. This is an old guy talking, but you go back and look at World War II and what you did on two fronts and around the world without even really airplanes that could get you there in 3.5 years. I mean, this has been a year now. And these guys, how tough, all these people do is talk. Why don't you just say every hospital is going to have a team of we're going to take one of the ambulances and we're going to put a big cooler in there. We have three people. They're going to hit three nursing homes a day, and these drugstores are going to give it out. And this is West Virginia, which most people would say would be the most backward state in the U.S., has had the best program because they have mom-and-pop pharmacies, and they just said, here, give people vaccines, and they did it. They didn't talk all day.
It's really hard to talk about this without getting political, and I don't like to get political. So
no.
Can we talk?
Oh, no, actually, no. I'm trying not to be, because what I'm saying is, just in general, people don't do stuff. They're not used to doing it. They're used to talking about it, left and right. They spend their day. I'm just saying this is not that difficult.
I agree with you, Chief. I agree with you. I 100% agree with you, and it's a shame. But hey, We got a couple minutes left. What do you want to talk? Any markets here?
Yeah. What do you
stocks? What do you want to talk
about?
At
the end of the day, who are going to be the big losers in like these GameStops and things?
Who do you think?
Well, do you think the short guy? I read this weekend that the shorts have only gotten rid of 8% of their shares. That they're just feeding the margin, and eventually they'll get their money back or most of it.
There was a lot of money made on order flow there, number one.
Oh, sure.
Right? And I think it's great that the retail trader has, become more involved over the last year or so. But anybody that thought that Melvin Capital, this is nothing new, Chief. I mean, hedge funds. Hedge funds have been going after each other for years, and it's a bloody game.
Yep.
And this is a short squeeze, and it happened. And, shame on you. One thing we talk about on our show is when you short it, and you know this, Chief, too, and Maddie should know this, when you short a stock at $5, what's the most money you can make?
$5, yeah. You're not going to get all five.
What's your risk?
Yeah, the sky.
Yeah, infinity.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Joel, I got a question for you. If you have a stock that you think is trading 20 that's worth nothing, and we've seen some of those, Kmart, a lot of places where they just were imploding, I can see shorting a thing at 20 or buy put spreads, but I wouldn't. Shorting it at 20, but once it gets down to 5 and it sits there for like years, I mean, I'm looking at this. One of my clients had some Best Buy. Not Best Buy, BlackBerry.
Bed Bath & Beyond.
No, BlackBerry. Well, Bed Bath & Beyond. But, I mean, the thing has been $3 for, like, ever. Once you've made your money, why do you maintain the short and just keep sitting on top of it? What's the point?
It's risk-reward. And, these guys, I mean, a lot of it's ego, a lot of it's vengeance trading. I mean, they're based on fundamentals, Chief. Fundamentals are out the window, okay?
Look at
PCG.
Yeah.
I mean, I still don't know what the hell is going on with that stock, right?
Well, speaking of BB, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. I know you guys got a pretty good feed, but the stock's trading 13. Somebody bought like thousands of the 38 calls, like from February 19th. I think it was 19th. I'm not positive. 12th or the 19th. It's the thing's trading 15 yesterday. What possessed you to buy? And they paid through the nose for the things, the 38 calls. I mean, what are they thinking of?
They're thinking. And what stock was it?
BlackBerry.
Oh, because they think it's going to be another short squeeze.
Well, but I mean,
that's what they think.
I don't know. Why wouldn't you buy the 20-38 spread or something for a cheaper price?
You're talking common sense, okay? Could you stop doing that?
I probably should, yeah.
By the way,
before I hop, I just want to tell your audience that I've been trying a new thing on Pre-Market Prep, my own YouTube channel.
Okay.
I've been doing a Sunday night. I've just been doing 15, 20 minutes talking about what's going on in the markets, the opens, the futures, what to look for over the week. So I tweeted out, I'm at Spoos, SPUS. I tweeted out, but it's on, you'll see it. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll get my tweet, you get to see it.
We'll help you. Hey,
good guess.
Since you did that, what happened Sunday night when we opened down 25 and an hour later we're up 25?
I was only there for the down part, and then I went up and had some dinner. So it was just a flush, You had the Friday flush. Some week longs, and there was no news out there. We were down 50 handles. Buy the dip, Chief. I mean, that's what it was. Nothing new. Buy the dip.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Go blue when they decide to play again.
Okay.
We want to break. Matty, write to Kenny.
Quick break.
S&P futures down, up 29. NASDAQ futures up 100. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 408-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
When I think of money, I think of Kenny Polcari. There's the guy. If he was in Chicago, they'd call him Cash Polcari.
I like it.
How are you, buddy? SP Futures up 29. NASDAQ Futures up 100.
Good, how are you?
I hear you're the guy who flipped the market Monday night, bought the bottom ticket of Spooz.
And yeah. I'm the one who did it all by myself.
So you haven't looked back. You're up. You're up what? You're 100 Spoo points. You're up. That's not bad.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? But I mean, listen, it's nothing that you and I, and most of the people in our generation knew and understood. I mean, the irrationality about what was going on last week, it just doesn't cease to amaze me, especially when you try to have conversations with some of these people that were on the other side of that trade. You know, this thing's going to 1,000. We're not selling it. Blah blah blah. Anti-establishment. We know what we're doing. We don't care if this trade makes sense. We don't care if we lose all our money. This is a revolt. Really great. Perfect. That's a great investment thesis. Good luck to you. And so now you see it all. You know, starting to fade. It's clearly, you know, we knew it would, and it will continue to fade because, you know, even at $158 a share, GME is not worth that. So
no.
So. You know, we'll see where it goes along with AMC or BlackBerry or Bed Bath & Beyond, whatever the other ones, you know, list the names that they had. You know, and it was interesting because J.J. Kinahan from TD Ameritrade got on CNBC this morning. You know,
he's trade with him. He was an OEX guy.
He just made it very clear. He goes, look. He goes, we didn't have a problem trading any of those stocks. He said, we raised the margin requirements. We stopped people from selling it naked short because it wasn't borrowable.
Right.
We couldn't borrow it, so therefore you couldn't do it. But so there, that wasn't the, so that was the reason we stopped it, for no other reason, just because you couldn't borrow it. So, and the fact that they raised the margin requirements just made it more expensive to try to play in that world. But TD Ameritrade didn't stop anyone from trading, nor did Fidelity, nor did E-Trade, nor did any other platforms. This was specifically a Robinhood financial problem, and people don't necessarily want to hear that part of the story, but that is the story.
Actually, a few of the firms that cleared through Apex had the same problem.
Well, Interactive Brokers, I know. Do they clear through? I think they self-clearing, though. All
they're self-clearing.
I didn't hear of anybody else, though.
Well, Apex has a few firms. I'm not calling them out or anything, but we had we clear two places. We clear RBC and we clear IB for our quick Twitch business. And IB had some restrictions, but I think you could always buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think, you know, Robinhood clearly came under even more extreme pressure, partly because most of the people that were in that Reddit room, whatever, most of them trade on that platform. So I get it, but all that exposes is really the risk that Robinhood had. You know, under normal circumstances, it's great. Yeah, trade for free, it's wonderful. Come on, we'll sell your order flow. Don't worry, you're getting your best execution. Nobody's taking advantage of anybody. Yeah, right. Okay. And then when it all hits the fan, that clearly shows, you know, the weakest link in the chain, and that was Robinhood.
Well, they went self clearing.
Wall Street comes to the rescue.
Well, they went
the government that came to the rescue. It's Wall Street comes to the rescue. But think about it for a minute, because it's Wall Street that stands to lose all the risk, right? People like Citadel, Point 72, those guys stand to lose a lot, so it makes perfect sense that they're going to come and try to salvage it and save it. We've seen this in history. You saw it during, you know, the Hunt brothers when they tried to corner the silver market, how the street came together and loaned them $1.1 billion. You saw it during long-term capital when the street came together to save, you know, John Merriweather's ass when his failed trade, you know, went exponential. And so this is Wall Street once again coming to assist Robinhood because they all face the risk. And so they all face the risk of being, you know, financially damaged or potentially wiped out. So they come together to try to salvage the situation. And they do, and it's fine. And, you know, we'll learn from this and there will be some adjustments made. But, you know, this is just a repeat of history. Nobody should really be surprised.
I have a story for you someday over an adult beverage regarding the long-term one. And it's going to cause you to reach for the barf bag regarding regulators even more.
Right.
Because those guys, the short version was, I don't know if you recall, but on an expiration Friday, which there was only one per month in those days, they lowered the discount rate about 10 o'clock in the morning. This is back when the OEX was massive and absolutely buried everybody in a pit. And I went out to New York for a World Series thing. I was chairman of the marketing committee, and one of the dupes in the member firm says to me, "Hey, you know, I'm supposed to ask you a question." I go, "Well, what do you, why? How bad did people get hurt in the OEX?" Essentially, the Fed did that on purpose to refloat the firms that bailed out long-term capital. They essentially gave them some of their money back by letting them know they were going to drop that. And the big losers were some of the people in the OEX pit. I knew a couple friends for a long time who got carried out that day. So I don't like that stuff, Kenny. when you say the it's one thing for one firm to lend somebody else some money, it's quite another for the Fed to orchestrate to maintain the status quo of the guys that are somewhat in. I mean the Citadel pays what, 58 cents a contract to Robinhood on option trades, and there's only like three or four firms left making. There might be a few more making option. Kenny, there's something wrong with that. There's something really wrong with that. So, I mean, I'm not saying we should, you know, disassemble the situation, but how do we go in our lifetime from 2,000 market makers to 4? And now we have to protect the 4 no matter what. I mean, do we really, is that really the way we needed to go? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. And listen, this whole issue about, you know, talk about payment for order flow, you know, is going to be an issue that certainly has been, you know, a lot of people in the industry have been talking about for a decade. Nobody wanted to pay attention, but this also kind of exposes the conflict in payment for order flow, whoever they're selling it to, whether they're selling it to the wholesale or whether they're selling it to other hedge funds. And I guess who pays the most is going to get the information first to kind of glean as much data. Which way is the retail money flowing? What stocks are they moving into? What sectors are they moving out of? What sectors are they moving into? And it gives, you know, all that data is worth a lot of money as long as someone's willing to pay for it.
Well, they're willing to pay for it even if they weren't willing to pay for it. on the trade itself, they're getting ahead of.
Right.
But I have a question for you. I mean, this is not one, but you know these people more than I do. I mean, I used to know some of them, but that was a long time ago. How is it that as the rules have gotten stricter and stricter on people, I mean, us having to locate first? If Kenny Pulcheri wanted to do a trade for PTI 5 years ago and you want to sell 1,000 shares of Coca-Cola, I didn't have to blink. Yeah, the Coca-Cola's available. Now, if I don't call, it's a violation.
You got to call. You got to put where you located the stock in the in your order management system. You actually have to put down who you called, who you spoke to, and who promised you that they would loan you the stock.
Right. So how come we have 48 swinging idiots willing to come? Well, we don't get that many people, and I'm not bad mouthing our regulators to that extent, but willing to come to the PTIs of the world and go over every single trade And yet here you got somebody who's 130% of the short interest. And I don't think they followed any of those rules, did they?
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously going to be, that should be at the very top of the list of, you know, conversations that we should be having. But it is amazing to me that happened, that these guys got short more than the float is, and nobody said, hey, what's going on here?
Okay,
none of the regulators said it, but certainly the analysts and those two young guys that you've read about now in the Wall Street Journal that had been doing the work, you know, okay, so they were making more of a valuation argument, but one way or the other, they highlighted, somebody in that room started highlighting the fact. Now, whether you want to say it was a Reddit day trader, or whether you want to say it was someone much more sophisticated, which I think it was.
I think it was, too.
You know, playing themselves off as a day trader in that room, because you don't have to identify yourself, right? You could put yourself in there and say, XYZ day trader. Meanwhile, you could be some big hedge fund that's having that conversation in that room, which is exactly what I think happened. I think there were much more sophisticated players in that room igniting the fuel. But one way or the other, it is what it is.
Well, Kenny, anybody who thinks
it's illogical.
Anybody who thinks that people took it from 370 to 520 doing two shares of stock, they're smoking
right.
The crinkly
has
cigarettes.
No understanding. Yeah. Has no understanding.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
Well, so I'm curious, one of these days, and I'd love to have you with me, I want to get from the rung where you got to obey all the rules to the rung where you don't have to obey all the rules. I mean, where is that rung? Is it, I mean, somewhere along the line, I've never been able to get over that, I've never been able to make it to that step, but somewhere
yeah.
there is that
yeah.
step. And when are we going to stop that? Ever in our lifetime?
We'll see, but there should be, I've never gotten to that rung either. I'm always on the side of, play by the rules, but I guess maybe I've been missing the boat all these years, right? Because plenty of people are playing on the other side of the fence.
Well, the question I was asking to Joel earlier, if you and I are smart enough to see that there's a stack that's, $20, it should be two. I got no problem us shorting it and the proper way and buying some puts and maybe selling some calls, knowing that the risk really is to the upside because you can only make. But once it gets
right.
down to 2.5 or 3, why do I maintain that position? I mean, why is anybody still short BlackBerry at $3 or $3? What's the point?
I have no idea. That's a whole other conversation. And how Melvin Capital, if they were short way down at $2 and $3 and $5, wherever they get themselves short, and the thing started to trade up, once it trades at $15 or $20 or $25, you'd think, okay, where's your risk management controls? Where do you start to say this trade isn't going the right way for me? Where do you start to, instead of doubling down even more, you start to manage your risk? I mean, that's just a whole other conversation, which is mind-boggling to me.
Well, Maddie and Kenny, if you know for sure that if it's a short at 5, it's a double short at 10. We all know that.
Well, yeah, but then is it a quadruple short at 20?
Without a doubt.
I mean, listen,
what about 400? You borrow $2 billion from your best buddy and you really let it go at 400, right? I mean, if it's worth two, it is 400. You're right back in the saddle here. I mean, if I can just get this thing back to two, I'll make all my money back and then some, right? I mean,
yeah.
These guys don't think like we do, Kenny. They don't think like we do.
No, they don't. Yeah, no, they don't.
Because we don't have friends that'll lend us $2 million.
You've got to learn as they go along, right?
Evidently.
It's an expensive lesson, but you got to learn.
Hey, buddy, I'm reading your stuff every day. It's good stuff. Thank you very much. Good seeing you.
Right.
Or good talking to you. SP
Futures
up 29. NASDAQ Futures up 100. We have Mr. Jeff Joseph, I believe, right when we come back. We'll be back right now, back in a minute, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI ProDirect. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. It's from Matt Weber. We have Mr. Jeff Jost from Wealthrock Magazine with us as well. S&P Futures up 30. NASDAQ Futures up 103. Buy the dip. Sunday night, you could have bought the dip. You're up 100 spoos. Jeff, I'm sure, was in there buying. Jeff, how are you, buddy?
Should we be buying the GameStop dip? Is that the plan?
You mean the dip or the collapse? when does something become a dip and become a crash? I don't know. How about it? We have a Betty says we have a question. We
might just real quick, based on the conversation you and Kenny were having about the short sellers. Daniel writes in, what about the shorts who incurred losses on Friday? Don't they need to cover their losses within 2 days after the fact?
Depends if you can feed them, if you can feed the margin. If you have enough money to see it, if you put up 50%, I don't believe you still have a maintenance margin on the short, so your maintenance is 30. But if you put up 50% on a stock that's 100, you're putting up 50 bucks. If it runs at 200, you now owe 25 because you need 75, right, Jeff?
Right.
So you need to either cover that or you need to buy the stuff in. One or the other is what you need to do. And the idea is, I mean, clearly these people had. If you short something at 10 and it runs to 50, and you think the people that are paying 50 are a bunch of two-share morons, which I think is probably the wrong thing to think, then you can either, your first instinct is to probably feed this position and say, sure as hell not going to buy them back here, because if I thought it was a short at 10, why would I buy it back at 50? It's something you definitely could do. Now, if you have the wherewithal. Now, the question is, do you have the money to send in? But you definitely have to send something in, right, Jeff?
Yes, you have to. Or liquidate.
Yeah, or liquidate. Yeah. And, if you don't have the money and you just lost the dough, that's when you become a risk to your clearing firm and your brokerage firm. So, not everybody has the money to send in. So.
But I think before you do anything, you should really check with your teenager.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, when do you think the story is? It's a bunch of people doing one and two shares. I mean, Kenny Polcari was just saying, hey,
I think that is maybe how it started, yeah. Or that was a big part of the momentum, but that certainly wasn't it.
No,
I mean, there obviously you, the volume alone tells you that there were some big players in there too.
Well, once the people felt that they had the shorts on the run, they're going to pile and start buying it too.
Plus, that's right.
Plus the guy, there's always somebody who's the first person in, and I always think this with Bitcoin too. If I start something rolling and I go from 10 to 15 to 20, it's somewhere I'm going to be encouraging, Kenny Polcari to buy the stuff and I'm the one selling it to him, right? At some point there, you guys go get him, I got enough, right? Right, Jeff?
Yeah, the greater fool theory.
Oh yeah.
Exactly.
Well, there's always the Lone Ranger coming over the hill when you need him, right? But maybe not.
Sure. And that's what fueled the late part of the run-up, of course, you know. And I think I shared last week just the anecdote of having a teenage son ask me, hey, should I be buying this? And the answer is no, you're late. And
yeah.
And the notion that this is, like I said, the press loves to romanticize this. They really want to see this as a trend, the beginning of something major. This is taking down the man, which I'm all for, but this is not, this is not repeatable. This was a black swan event. This will not, you, this is not, oh, just go to Reddit now and see what the next stock target's going to be. It's just not going to work that way.
Well, I do like the part, though, of course, it'll never make it because the big people always manage to get around it, but I do like the part that regular people seem to be able to find out that some stock is incredibly over, you know, I'll use the term overshorted, you know, one, when they're short allegedly more than the float. And if somebody at Reddit can find this out, yet the SEC appears blind to it, that's a message, isn't it?
It is. It is a good message, and it's a good point. And something that I haven't seen a lot of ink on is change.org. I happened to receive a petition from them. Boy, they send a lot of stuff out, by the way. If you're on their list, you know, you'll get a daily petition from change.org of somebody's feathers ruffled on something. But I thought this was a good one. This was basically trying to requiring, boy, I forget the name of the filing form. Is it the 10Q? I think that's 30 days late, but, you know, securities, significant material amounts of securities trading has to be filed under a 10Q. I think that's a quarterly document.
Yeah, oh, yeah, SEC, absolutely.
At SEC.gov. And it shows major positions within a publicly traded stock in excess of 3% of the float. I'm not sure of the numbers and what the requirements are, but the problem is it's reported by the government only on a quarterly basis. So even though there's a government requirement that if you secure a material amount of position of a company stock, either long or short, that you have to report it to the SEC, that actual report is on a quarterly distribution. So it could be a month or two late.
I'm not, I don't, you know what, Kenny, that might have changed. Kenny, Jeff, I'm going squirrely here, but that's what happens when you get old.
Well, what change.org was asking specifically in the petition is that it now be a real time report.
See,
with no lag time.
I don't know when that changed, Jeff, because when I first got to the floor, before I was trading the OEX, there were takeovers all over the place. And the deal was, I mean, you don't see people doing that now. So much, but in those days, people would actually, like, if you were going to pay, say, a stock trading 65, and
sure,
Luckbox wanted to take over, say, Pepsi, and you knew you were going to pay 75, you got to buy, I think it was 5% in the open market. All of a sudden, there'd be this big volume, and the stock would be 66, 67, and once you got to 5%, you had to declare what you were doing. Now, this is another company. You had to declare whether you were going to, and then you'd make your bid for the other 95% up, you know, I'll pay 75 for the rest or something. But you actually got to buy, I think it was 5, and then I think it might have gone down to 3 or something, but you had to do that, I think you got 5 days. It wasn't a quarter. Now, maybe that's changed, but you had to tell pretty quickly because people say, oh, we'll know in 5 days who's buying this stuff. Well, actually, yeah. Talk about an unreal story. In terms of today's, shall we say, racially charged world, remember the name? I don't remember the person, Howard Hughes.
Sure.
And remember when he was holed up in as he got older. When he was young, he was this dashing, really good looking guy. What was his incredible invention, Jeff? That was pretty much changed aviation.
Well, he was an aviator.
Yeah.
Well, what was it?
When you look at a plane now and you look out on the wing, see how smooth it is? He invented the flush rivet.
No.
Where a rivet didn't have to stick up
sure.
on, up top the skin.
Sure.
Which was the drag of a flush rivet versus a regular one. Anyway.
Really? That's what turned him into
a smooth surface.
He probably just screwed it in too hard.
God. Well, then as he got older, you know, he got totally screwed up. So he ended up being this guy who lived in the top floor of either the dunes or one of those places. And he was a total germaphobe to where he had these Mormon guys. If he went to the bathroom, they'd put paper towel that he'd walk on. Yet he never had anybody clean his teeth or cut his fingernails or toenails. He looked absolutely grotesque. And the guy who was the first in command for the guy never met him. He just would... handwrite notes and have somebody take them downstairs and hand them to the guy every day at the bottom of the elevator. So one day he decides he's going to buy ABC. I was on the trading floor. It's like 1980, 1981. But I had a brown badge, so I couldn't trade ABC. And all of a sudden, ABC's going up, 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 up. And they were doing the 5% stuff, right? He got to like 4.9 or whatever, never said a word. So that afternoon, he's watching, this is a true story, he's watching the dating game. And they had this fairly dark-skinned white guy, I mean, he was Caucasian. He thought he was black. And they set him up with this white girl. And he decided, I'm never going to own a station that has a black guy date a white girl. So the next day, the stock went right back down again. And the people at trading floor were like, what the hell just happened? It wasn't until like a month later this story came out. They had no idea. Somebody bought 5% of the stock over like a two-day period and turned around and sold the same 5% stock right back down to where it was. It was all because of the dating game. And he thought they hooked up a black guy with a white girl. Hmm. And because his whole view of the world was through TV. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, but what I'm saying, in those days, it was 5% and you had to declare in 5 days or something. Now, maybe that's all changed, but I don't ever remember you could wait a whole quarter before you told somebody what you're doing. But maybe that is it now. I mean, it could be what it is now.
You know, there's, it just leads me to think that story is some of the extravagances of our let's call them genius, business people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we just finished, and not to be a cheap plug back into Luckbox.
Oh, right ahead.
But we just published our latest issue today, which will be on intelligence and IQ. Today it came out in print. You know, it was available last week, but now it exists in print and being published today. And we interviewed Chris Langdon, who is reported to be the smartest man in America. He typically breaks the IQ tests. He's off the charts, and so the estimate for him is somewhere between 190 and 200,
wow,
which is materially over, you know, the 160 of Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Nikola Tesla was 180. So this guy is way off the charts, Chris Langdon. And he's a, so we talked to him, I talked to him, in fact, and he, you know, I'll save it for the interview, and Luckbox is free at getluckbox.com, but boy, he was out there. He was really, really out there. And he had some kind of alt-right conspiracy things going on, but he is the smartest man on record in the United States. But boy, he, you know, now he's a rancher, is what he does. He was self-taught, you know, homeschooling, learned everything himself, and, didn't take him long to, you know, be speaking 8 languages before the age of 10, and, just a, you know, crazy smart guy, but he really has some weird thoughts.
Jeff, how do those people, I mean, when you're talking about this IQ stuff, and I have not even looked at it. I mean, I never took any kind of test past going to high school. How do you weight this stuff? How do you weight somebody who knows a lot of math and you know, he can't, you know, he has trouble with his home language, and versus somebody else who not so good at math but owns setman. If you can speak 7 languages, I mean, which gets you higher? I mean, how do you weight it?
Well, you know, IQ is pretty specific. You know, there's a lot of spatial pattern recognition. It's more about logic and deduction as opposed to facts about what you know. So if you don't know vocabulary or if you don't know certain types of algebraic equations, that's not what it's really testing. It's testing for the kind of an intuitive and adaptive ability to confront scenarios of logic and reasoning and to come away with an actionable hypothesis. So it's taken, you know, over 100 years to develop. So there's nothing about it that's questionable as an exam. It measures something, and it measures something extremely well. The problem is too many people want to say it's a stand, you know, that it measures how smart you are, or it measures, you know, your future. Now, there is an absolutely direct correlation between high IQ scores and high outcomes in life. But the bell curve around those higher IQ scores, so if you get them into Mensa requires a 132 IQ, typically. So 132 is above the 2% level. So less than 2% of Americans will have a 132 IQ. It is way outside the bell curve. It is where the fat tail is, right? And if you are Mensa acceptable by having achieved that 132 score, yeah, overall, those people are going to have better outcomes in life as determined by income, and those studies exist. However, the distribution around that mean still looks like a bell curve. So all they did was shift their bell curve to the right. So, you know, the majority of those people are going to have, you know, a pretty common outcome, and then there's going to be the fat tails to the left and the fat tails to the right of people who really underperform their peer group. But it is true, and, you know, that's what how Charles Murray caused so much controversy. It is true that people with higher outcomes invariably have higher IQs, have higher outcomes. So it's controversial because there's a lot of identity politics has been kind of, you know, worked into the study of IQ, particularly with respect to race and gender. And we addressed all those issues. So it's a really interesting topic. I learned a lot from it, and it was really fun to go down that little rabbit hole. But that's does IQ really matter? Is the new issue out at getluckbox.com, and it is free in digital format. So
I would have I'd love to be able to talk to some of that, because I actually did some studies on that when I was in college, and it a lot of it has to do with what people think are. And intelligence kind of thing is some people keep going and keep learning, some don't. Some people, they learn stuff and then they don't do it for 10 years and they forget it all. I couldn't do a calculus problem, my life depended on it, but it's been so long. But I was okay at it when I was, you know, I was pretty good at it when I was, I mean, a lot of it is people just put so much time into their day that they have an amazing energy, intellectual energy that just, almost like compounds or other people plateau. It's weird. I mean, there's a lot to it.
Well, academic, it's interesting you mentioned that, because we tried to approach, because it isn't easy to define. When you're speaking to scientists or academics about IQ and intelligence and the G factor, and then emotional intelligence comes into play, their definitions, you know, get really narrow and out of grasp. They're not that approachable. But if you back it into it another way and say, tell us the most commonly seen characteristics among people with high IQ, the most common characteristic, and then it starts defining your data set in a more approachable manner. The most interesting, I think, and common attribute is an insatiable curiosity, academic curiosity, so to continue to learn. So typically people with high IQs will continue to learn well into their 30s, 40s, and 50s. They will take on new scientific and mathematic disciplines. They invariably will learn new languages. That's part of what they do, is study languages. They'll take on new games, and play different types of video games. They'll read voraciously. So it is a factor. It is people who continue to challenge themselves with new platforms, whether it be new technologies. Those are all parts of, you know, common attributes of people who demonstrate high cognitive abilities.
Well, because, I mean, there's guys, I do a lot of reading about World War II, and there's a book. Do you ever read A Man Called Intrepid?
No, I know of it, though.
It's Bill Stevenson was the head of the British Secret Service. Who's the guy who was... See M in the Bond films?
Oh, sure.
And actually, there was a Q, and because Ian Fleming was in the British Secret Service, so a lot of stuff he wrote about was somewhat legit. But the guy, if I can remember, it's been so long. I think he was a world class mathematician. He was one of the inventors of TV. He was a lightweight boxing champ, and he was the head of British Secret Service during the war. And they said he would. The reports across his desk, I mean, if you can contrast him with some of the people, without going right or left, that we consider leaders now, that looks to me like their only job is to get their face on TV, that he would read the equivalent of a Victorian novel a day with the reports that hit his desk.
Jesus.
And you compare somebody like that, and why even a guy like Churchill, the amount of reading he would do. And now Franklin Roosevelt, according to Armin Hammer, was said he was the most brilliant man he ever met. And second was Lenin, of all people. But Roosevelt whole thing, he was not a voracious reader, but he would schedule people like every 15, 20 minutes, half hour, in whatever industry they were in, or whatever they were doing, and he would ask them questions, and he had just a memory that he would put together what somebody said today, what another guy or lady said 6 months ago, and those kinds of things, and just, I mean, the entire atomic bomb stuff was his interview with Enrico Fermi. Was he said that they can really do that? I mean, what's his wife's name? Eleanor got a stupid story. Fermi came here. I mean, one of the things, there were what, seven Nobel scientists that managed to make it out of the Axis powers, and the idiots didn't try and, well, I'm glad they didn't. They didn't try and keep them. So we ended up with those guys here, and that's how we ended up with the bomb. But Fermi goes to see some admiral. And, of course, he's got a captain as his, quote, assistant. So guess what the captain says to the admiral? We got some WAP out here wanting to talk about some stupid Adam thing or something. They didn't even give the guy the time of day. Some stupid WAP. He's a Nobel Prize winner, right? And so somehow or another, he meets a friend of Eleanor Roosevelt, who says to Eleanor, hey, you better talk to this guy. He's a Nobel Prize winner, and they're talking about this weapon. So she scheduled him to see Franklin like in a month's notice. And the entire push for the atomic bomb program came from Roosevelt himself, because he's the only one who listened to the guy. I mean, you think of stuff like that, you sit there and go, how could history possibly have turned on something like that? And yet, but Roosevelt, that's what he did for like 12 hours a day. Like 10 hours a day, he'd sit there and listen to people. A steady stream. They said the difference when he got elected in November, in those days, you didn't be going to office, I think, until, was it March or May, Jeff? I think it was March.
Yeah, later.
Said he talked to the equivalent of like 15 people a day for 5 months in every walk of life and every brand of business. So by the time he was in there, he knew more about what was going on in every industry in the munitions area and everything than anybody, because he had an absolute steel trap, but he didn't want to read anything. He wanted people to tell him stuff. Or send him a letter or something. Just a whole different way of attracting stuff. He wasn't it's just different. But the guy never forgot anything. I mean, how could you be like that? These are very special people.
That sounds like the people that are running our vaccine distribution in Illinois.
Do you think we could get the people off TV and start going and giving somebody a shot?
You know, there's 4.6. I saw something this morning. There's 4.1 million Illinois residents that are over age 65, and they're therefore eligible, right? Only 1 million have been distributed, so there's 3.1 million outstanding. They're saying that the average time to identify where you can get a shot is taking anywhere from 1 to 3 hours. Just to find, you know, the Walgreens or CVS where you can get actually a shot. So that's an estimate of 3 to 10 million, basically, you know, lost hours just in the last month of trying to identify a shot, trying to find a shot, which is an interesting way to look, you know, productivity look at the cost of a vaccine rollout or an ineffective one.
Why can't you say to a Well, I'm not going to say the parish is around anymore, but why can't you just use it? I mean, when we got polio shots, they came to the school. 10 people showed up. We had 1,600 kids. We all got a shot in one day.
Well, I'm sure that will happen because the teachers aren't going back to school unless they get their shots. So I guess that's. How it's going to listen? Maybe that's how it's going
to
work.
Why don't we take the opportunity to disband that union? And you know, I'm a union person, but. They're over the top on this, Jeff.
You know, it's unbelievable, and I hate to make this comparison because then it gets more political and perhaps confrontational in people's minds. But when you think about what police have gone through nationwide as a result of the actions of, you know, probably, you know, 50, 100 really awful cops, and then the others who have some problems in their heads probably, compared to these teachers' unions, it's amazing that we're letting them off the hook so much. It's just amazing. You know, look at this. Chicago has 335,000 kids in the system, and 81% of them are kids of color, right? I mean, these 25% in Chicago have said that it could considered suicide already.
Yep.
It's 71% of teachers have voted no on going back, even though the CDC says that 99.997% are not at risk, teachers and students, by returning to school. That when you lump them all together. So 71% of the teachers holding out for vaccines. I don't understand how the populace is letting them off the hook. It's just unbelievable what they're doing to a generation of learners right now.
You've got a political system. You can't go anywhere without the teachers if you want votes, and it's bad. Whatever my mother's cousin's daughter is to me, I don't know what she is. I talked to her last week in Columbus. She's a teacher. She's been teaching since September 1st. They never stopped. And she's in Columbus.
Where is that?
Columbus Catholic school system.
Sure, the parochial schools are. Yeah. You know, they've been teaching since the beginning of the year, and some of them long before that.
Well, now
the Loyola Academy. I know they've been in session for quite a long time.
But you end up saying we're not going to go back to work unless you take this 50-year-old building and double the ventilation. You know, there was a, I don't know if I mentioned this before, maybe not to you, Jeff. I used to go to the we got to go on a break here in a second, but we used to go to the First Look all the time. I had a client who was the head of, but poor guy unfortunately passed. He was a pulmonary surgeon. And so he would drag us to the, not drag us, we loved to go because he had a lot of really nice friends. We went for the Illinois Lung Association or whatever the hell they were named. And they'd always have a little room for the night before and always have a bar in there and so forth. Was one year they put up this whole wall of it used to be all these lung associations essentially started out as TB places, right? Because that was the big thing back in the late 1800s. They were already the Illinois Tuberculosis Society. Once you pretty much knocked that out, it became the Illinois Lung Association, whatever. So they showed pictures in these rural settings, Jeff, of teachers teaching in the wintertime without walls and roof on the classroom because they wanted to stop the spread. The kids are in their mittens, essentially writing. The classes were outside. They didn't say we're not going to have classes. They did what they had to do, right? I mean, this group doesn't want any part of that.
It's amazing that they're getting such a pass because obviously the people are angry, and it's media that's really giving teachers a pass right here.
We got to go to break here, Jeff. Let's pick that up when we come back because the fire people next door—they've been here every morning, haven't they, Maddie? Saying hello to us.
They have.
I mean, they don't get a break. Neither the policemen, neither the garbage people, neither is your Amazon guy, neither does the food store. Crazy stuff. All of a sudden, I need a break. SP Futures up 29, and SP Futures up 101. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Ollies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P is up 31. We kind of stuck here for a while, 30, 31, 29, right there. NASDAQ futures up 109. Individual stocks, we got a big move out of UPS this morning at earnings last night. They're up $7. So that's a positive. For individual stocks in the Dow, we got Apple up 2, Boeing up 287. We got Chevron, the earnings, actually they didn't have earnings last night, Exxon did, up 174. And we had Johnson & Johnson up 147, J.P. Morgan up 158. Pretty much everybody in the Dow is up. Yeah, the Dow futures are up 239. I'm trying to get to Europe. My screen is doing a jump around here for some reason. There we go. Over in Europe, we've got... Manny, why don't you do Traffic, Weather, Sports so I can settle down my screen.
I can do that. 34 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still working on a major situation down on the south side. There was a semi-fire that happened earlier this morning that had the inbound Bishop Ford completely blocked between 130th and 115th. That has now been reopened, but the two right lanes are still blocked as crews are working on that semi-truck fire, and it was a truckload full of tires, so probably not a great smell and some chemicals in the air as well, so that was a big issue. But you can now get by on the Bishop Ford, but the two right lanes are still blocked, so it's still very jammed up, so avoid that if at all possible. No issues on the actual Ryan. I-57 looking okay, same for the Stevenson. Normal traffic volumes on the Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Edens. Lakeshore Drive's been quiet all morning. Off the expressways in Lombard, Lombard Road at Fullerton, there's a crash. And then down in Bolingbrook, College Road at Hobson, there is an accident. But everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, cold temperatures, a little bit colder than yesterday, but similar. We'll see some sunshine, a high of 32. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 24 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 80 today. Right now, it is partly cloudy and 57. In sports, the Bulls snapped their three-game losing streak, beating up on the Knicks 110-102 last night. Suns topped the Mavericks 109-108. And in college basketball, Loyola beat Missouri State for the second straight day, blowing them out 70-50. Chief.
What's the story in spring training? Are they going to have one or no?
As far as I know, they are, but, you know, it's very fluid.
Yeah, the schedule came out. Anyway, DAX is up 144, 1%. FTSE up 33.5%. CAC around up 86, 1.6%. In Asia, we got rallies here. Taiwan, Shenzhen jumped 2%. Nikkei's up 271. That's 1%. Shanghai up 28.8%. Hang Seng up 355, 1.2%. Big difference in the last week, boy. Bonds, 1.11, so that's back up to where their highs were. When I say bonds, that's a 10-year rate, meaning bonds are going down. Bund minus 0.48, which is the highest we've seen in a while, the least negative we've seen in a while. Japan is 0.05, which is, again, that's pretty high for them. They've been 0.03 forever. Oil up 123, that's 2.3% to 54.78. Gold, however, down 27. It's been running up, but not today. It's 18.36. Silver down $1.90. 27.51. Guys are buying an awful lot of contracts in the silver ETF contract today. We'll see how those work out, because that I've got the silver ETF contract down $1.39 here at 25.38. I think some people bought like the 40 calls in there yesterday. I mean, way up there. We already did traffic, weather, sports. Yeah, this whole thing with this COVID, boy, you know what, Jeff? The TV and the radio, the amount of the amount of hype in the internet, people feel absolutely crazed about just lobbing stuff out there that they never even... I really love the fact that even the president, our new president, who maybe as much trouble listening to him as other people these days, but was talking about the Democratic congressman that got the COVID after being in the room on January 6th with the three Republican guys that didn't have a mask on. Nobody if you're president, don't you think, now, of course, you know, Trump said whatever he damn well felt, whether there wasn't a fact near it, wouldn't you think that you would at least want to know if one of those Republican guys actually had the disease, already had it, before you accuse them of infecting the whole room?
Yeah.
You mean, yeah. Wouldn't it at least cross your mind if you're in that kind of a position?
Sure.
I mean, I don't, and, you know, the weird part is this mask thing. I mean, again, I do it. I'm not going to be a knucklehead and not do it and cause people trouble. But at some point, I'm going to say I'm not doing this anymore, because the mayor of El Paso said they did a study down there, and they think the biggest places where it's being spread is not restaurants and bars, but it's in these big box stores. He said, I can't close those because they're so necessary. But everybody inside of those places was wearing a mask. So the idea that you're telling people that but every time somebody gets test positive now, they immediately think to, God, who is near me that didn't have a mask on? It's just not true, Jeff. It's just not true that it's that. Because if they were that good, if you wore one, you don't have to worry about anybody else, right?
Yeah, it's amazing how prone we are to groupthink. I mean, that's what this great experiment has turned out to prove, you know, how simple people, like how a president would accept, you know, a story from the press that hasn't been investigated, or how people walk around outside in my community with masks on, even though there's nobody within yards of them, you know, within 20, 30 yards. I don't do that. I've never considered walking into a store without a mask, and won't until this is over, but that's my personal decision, and I wouldn't impose that on others, and I have the right to leave a store if I see somebody not wearing a mask as well. But what I just don't understand, particularly while we're supposed to be listening to science, is these people walking around in suburban communities, not like, you know, walking down the streets of Chicago where someone might be sharing the same sidewalk with you. These people walking around with masks on and you know, in the middle of a, you know, and with nobody around for 20 yards it just baffles me.
Once in a while, Maddie and I will see a jogger in the morning. We're talking, you know, 5:30, jogging along with a mask on.
Sure, yeah.
But it just it's bad science. I mean, it's just the idea of a healthy person wearing a mask when nobody's around them and not washing it and not throwing it out twice a day. Jeff, it's just not good for you.
No, it's not good. It's an unpleasant reminder of oral hygiene. Also, I mean, you know, after a while, it's like, all right, enough of my own breath.
I don't see an end game to this. I don't see anybody saying we're going to.
The masks are coming in different colors now. So
yeah, but I mean, we're not. I don't see the president or anybody saying. We're gonna vaccinate a million people a day, and by the way, after you get your vaccinations, you get your two shots. Hey, go buy your Cub tickets and go there without a mask. There's no end to it. I mean, I read something last week that even if you have the antibodies, like I do, or if you have the vaccinations, you still need a mask. And I'm like, why? Isn't that the whole point of this? It's like saying get your polio shot and you still can't go to the beach. Well, isn't that why I got the polio shot? And I can't get it. I get to do stuff now. But we're not anywhere near there. I don't think.
You would think. You know, it's a different culture down at U of I, where my daughter is. So everything's based on, you know, they're getting tested every 2 days, and their app shows their current status. And when they're walking in anywhere, they show their app, and if it says they're clean, they're clean. And she says that most places indoor, nobody has masks on because they can't get in. Unless it, you know, they've been tested within 24, 48 hours.
So
most of the bars and restaurants, nobody has. I was talking to a friend in Schaumburg yesterday. He says nobody has a mask on in a restaurant.
No. Well, the waitstaff
does. I don't
know
how true that was, anecdotal, but he said, look, you know, I stop in a restaurant every day, usually a different one because he's on the road. He runs a business and he goes and visits his clients. And he said, I rarely see masks on from the majority of the patrons.
Well, no, you never. The rules
that,
are.
That was hard for me to imagine. You know?
No, those are the rules, Jeff. You walk in with it on. When you get to your table, you take it off. The wait staff always has theirs, and if you go to the men's room, you're supposed to put it back on. Go to the men's room.
Yeah.
So when you look around in the place, you're not going to see anybody with it on while they're sitting there.
Yeah.
How do you eat with a mask on?
Yeah, well, no. Just in general, he says walking in with people, you just don't see a lot of masks. He said it's not daily activity out there.
I can tell you some Southside people.
Speaking about West, though, there is some good news. I've really been watching the state of Illinois because it's such a mess, right? There's this newest study from Zipia, which is kind of a data cruncher that also ranked Illinois the state that's most hated in the country. And they used a three-factor model to determine hate. One was what self-declared residents of that state say they hate it. The second one was the amount of move-outs relative to the population. And the third was how other people in other states define that state. So Illinois hit the top, and it's probably a combination of everything, right?
Yep.
You know, pensions, CPU, CTU, you know, all these things. But I saw a bright spot today. I don't know if it's been reported that Naperville had unexpected, have you heard this? They had unexpected millions of dollars in surplus from not having the schools open. So they're distributing $10 million of that back to the taxpayers on a pro rata basis relative to their property taxes. So if you own a $400,000 home in Naperville, you're getting between $275 to $300 as a reimbursement for property taxes because your kids haven't been getting real schooling, and they're sending out 30,000 checks.
All right, so does that mean your kid didn't get? All right, let me put this.
Well, they're recognizing that they haven't really delivered, that Zoom isn't, yeah, and they save money from services, heat, air, janitorial, whatever, right? Whatever.
All right, I'm gonna do something I shouldn't do. This, you see, set me, my feeble mind immediately starts thinking in terms of numbers. All right,
but
so,
that's a nice hat tip to Naperville. To actually,
oh yeah, all right. So
they'll be running their business in a manner that they have a surplus and then redistributing it back to taxpayers.
Right, what I'm trying to put together here, by the way, I'm not debating that at all. It's a recognition. Yep. But if some of the stuff I've read, and I'm saying Naperville probably is not as bad as other places, but I've read that the average student, and Maddie, who was on it, was going, we had this discussion with, the average student is behind 5 to 7 months. Now, obviously, in Chicago public schools, you don't have a computer at home, you're behind a year. So in the Chicago public schools, and I'm guessing in Naperville and these other places, the contribution that a high school will get for every student is probably in somewhere the $14,000 to $18,000 range. All right, so if you lose a half a year because of this, I won't say screwing around because it's a real disease, if you lose half a year and you give people 400 hours back, I'm not so sure that it equates. I love the idea, the sentiment.
Oh, of course it doesn't. There's no way that they're, because they're still paying the teachers. That's a big farce about this whole thing with the teachers, but they're still getting paid. But, there's considerably less operating expenses when you have giant buildings that, aren't being staffed.
Right, well, there's no security issues,
there's no HVAC, there's no maintenance, there's no janitorial. It's a lot of money that's being saved, and they're giving some of it back.
Yeah, because they're probably not paying the poor janitors or paying the teacher. I got my question for you, or where I want to go with this, I know you still have kids in school. Are we really going to say that if this goes on for another couple of months in some of these places, that the seventh grader belongs in eighth grade next year?
Yeah.
It's at some point, are we just going to say, forget? I mean, let's get back to our $16,000 number, which is probably higher now. Are we going to make people go this summer, and try and get that half of the year back? Are we going to just say the hell with it? Everybody who was in sixth grade this year, even though you didn't do squat in a lot of places, that makes you a seventh grader next year. Are we going to do the year over? What are we going to do?
Good luck getting the teachers back this summer.
Well, I'm saying, I'm just talking about if it's you and I, even if we couldn't make the decision, okay,
no,
what are we going to do?
It's going to be like in sports. These are going to be students with an asterisk next to them. Everyone will know that the class of 2024, what that really means, or the class of 2022, I should say,
But just in terms of curriculum, I mean, are we going to try and jam at least a summary of sixth grade into the first 2 months of next year's seventh grade in an effort to catch up? or we're just going to pretend sixth grade was really done. You start right out in seventh grade, and the math you're supposed to learn this year, assume you learned it, even though you didn't. I mean, I have no idea what we're going to do here. Do you?
Well, I think they've taken another approach toward that. You know, they're teaching much less history now because so many historical figures have been canceled. I think that will even out. I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Who decided last week that we're going to dump Lincoln in Washington from any kind of? If it wasn't for those two guys, would we even have a country?
Well, the single most frightening thing right now is this CRTL, that acronym. Search up CRTL, Illinois. It will be voted on February 16th. That will mandate a progressive curriculum from K through 12. It is the most amazing thing I've read. It's probably worthy of a whole show. You have a lot of guests that can speak to this well, and you might want to really concentrate on that in the coming week. The current word is that the senators and representatives in Illinois are not hearing enough about this, and this is likely going to pass. And if you were to search it up and see what it's mandating in terms of having a point of view and foregoing civic action for social justice and just all the different things that it's mandating in terms of a teaching outlook, it's basically teaching people how to think, not what to know, and it's really worth reading about, and it's looming right out there right now. So
if we forget about our savage past, does it mean that we didn't have a savage past?
I guess so.
I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that.
Other good news in Illinois, we're the sixth state to surpass $1 billion in cumulative betting handle. You know, DraftKings and BetRivers and FanDuel are showing it in Illinois. The betting cumulative betting handle is up to $1.4 billion.
There's
$450 million alone in November that was wagered on sports in Illinois.
Have you been privy? You probably have been. As a matter of fact, when I open up the topic, you probably can quote a chapter and verse. The latest big study I was listening to on the radio the other day, wherever a big study is, how much more likely people that are not at work, on unemployment, are to bet than people who have a real job, which is exactly the opposite.
Boy, I bet there's a real correlation. Well, yeah. I can't speak to it only because I know I've looked at the DART numbers for the brokerage industry, which are through the roof right now. So people are trading more, as we all know, right? So I'm sure they're gambling more. So what is the number?
Well, I mean, I'm saying that you're more likely that somebody who has a job isn't a big better on sports because they don't have the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, if you don't have a job, you don't have the money.
That doesn't get in the way of, that's not a gamble. Thinking like a gambler.
You're not thinking like a gambler.
Well, I am a gambler.
If I bet, I'll have the money.
Yeah. I am a gambler, and when I don't have money is when I scale back.
You scale back, but you don't stop.
Right.
Well,
you don't, because I don't bet what I don't have.
Well, obviously. But I'm saying, whenever you talk about, unless the only place, I'm going to say probably, the only place that actually had a shtick going where all the money came from out of state, or a lot of it, was Las Vegas or Nevada back in the day. We had a million people in the population of Nevada when I started going out there was less than a million people. And how many people go to Vegas every year? 5 million or some massive number. So they could actually, every other place, the Illinois, the New York, all these other places that have gambling, the number always comes out to what, Jeff? 85% of the gambling comes from your people. And for a guy like Maddie who loves doing it and he's actually good at it. By the way, I love to gamble too. So it's not, it's not the point, but at least I understand that when a state decides to have gambling, all they know is they're getting revenue from their people. It's a very regressive tax. So even though I like to gamble and you do and so does Matt, that's not the point on a statewide deal. It's how can we get more money out of these people that don't have it? And that's how you're going to get it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, your least common denominator. I mean, who walk into the places where the lottery is and you'll see a lot of people of color, a lot of people who are not that, you know, I'm saying economically probably not as, the people that are buying the instant games, they're, I mean, my showcase was when I lived at 70 West Huron, every Saturday morning before I take my mom to breakfast, I get out and get my coffee, there's this African-American guy who worked the streets all night, $20 he'd make, he'd buy a quart of Coke, two things of Doritos, and 17 lottery tickets. And, you know, his tax rate had to be higher than anybody else's in the state.
Yeah.
By the way, did you hear the 3 years in a row, the number one real estate agent in Indiana?
Who's that?
Governor Pritzker.
Very funny.
It was flying all over the real estate people's tweeters or whatever the things are on their phones. And
well,
a big picture.
I know that a version of that joke will be coming out on gun sales soon. The number one gun salesman in the country is going to be considered Joe Biden soon.
Well, if you, how do you buy a gun or buy ammo? There's none around.
Yeah, well,
there's a few places here in Chicago. I get this stuff from members of our listeners. There's a few gun places now. You can only buy ammo if you're going to use it on their range. if you rent the spot on the range, how cool is that? Jeff, somehow or another, we have to come back to some level of common sense. And I don't, there's a guy who, I still have it around here somewhere, I should dig it up. This is years ago. Maddie and I kind of just started when we started this kind of downhill slide in the economy. But however you count it, okay, now obviously the economy and some numbers are fine. But it was a Tricky Dick's son-in-law works for this, think tank, and he said, when is this going to stop? The left fighting with the right and nobody getting anything done and blah, blah, blah. By the way, I have a question I want to ask you regarding that. And he says it'll not change, it'll not improve till we hit bottom. Jeff, what's bottom going to look like? And what makes everybody think that when you hit bottom and things get really, really bad, that the solution is good? I mean, if World War II didn't come around, where all the people had died, my uncle and other people, which was a horrible thing, but if World War II hadn't come around, what would have been the end of the Depression? I mean, how would we have still had the same system of government? Would we still have had any kind of faith in what we were doing? I mean, obviously it wasn't working out so hot, right? For a real lot of people. I mean, how do you get to the? Forget that. We'll talk about that. What I want to talk to you about is, did you spot the Republican plan for, instead of the $1.9 trillion that Biden came up with, it's like $700 billion. The one number.
The same plan that was agreed to that Pelosi went, right.
Right. Well, the interesting part is Biden had $160 billion for masks, gloves, vaccines. You know, I'm counting the vaccines, Jeff, at $20 a shot is what all the stuff I've read. Right, so 500 million vaccines is $10 billion. And that leaves you another 100. The Republican number, they cut back all the other stuff because they only want to do like half of the $1.9 trillion. That number is exactly the same. Now, I want to know, since you know more about this than me, who the hell is on that list that we're going to somehow 150, that's the same number of the entire expenditures of the federal government in 2000.
Right.
And in the next year, we're going to spend that on vaccines, masks, and gloves. Who the hell is on that list, and why are they so sacred to both sides?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you even find this? Because these, you ever get the feeling that, I never knew this when, I mean, I guess I should have, that when these guys are debating back and forth and get on TV and people in the public are lining up, whether you're left or right, that the people on both sides get the idea, and I see this stuff now that I'm in the middle. Do they get the idea that they have any idea what they're arguing about? Because there's nothing written. And you don't even know who these people are getting this money. And yet everybody's got an opinion on something they can't even see. Where am I wrong here?
Yeah.
Would you like to find out where that $160 billion is going? That's an awful lot of dough. How many gloves do you think? The masks, I think I bought a box of masks, pretty good ones, at Sam's Club. Maddie, what did I pay? I got 30 of them for $10 or something, didn't I? I think that's what I said. Some bizarre number like that, or $15, or like 50 cents a mask or something. How many did you get for $150 billion? What, are we going to start masking all the fish in the sea? I mean, I was stunned, Jeff, that every single number on the list had changed except that one. And I just wonder who the hell is on that list. It must be every pharmacy's got to be on there. Every hospital's got to be on there. But I mean, I don't think the person at the, would you think the person giving you the shot when it comes your time at the jewel store is getting a bonus for this? Or he's just, that's just part of his job now. Or he might be getting a little overtime. He's not getting any money, is he?
You wouldn't think so. It's
no.
Be part of his job.
So where's it going? And why? Yep. So the Republicans couldn't find a dime out of that list. They couldn't say, we'll cut this from 160 to 159. Not one dime could they pull out of there. Yep. Are you on the list? Just out of curiosity.
No, not on the list.
Well, the question is, how do we get on the list? We'd feel a lot better about it.
Speaking of that question, how do people, I've been receiving calls from family members that are over 65 that are trying to get their shots, and even though I just cited, you know, the difficulty, they're saying, estimating the average person waits 1 to 3 hours to try to identify where to get a shot. Do you know the short answer to that? I have too many people that are asking me that question, and there doesn't seem to be a...
Our producer has the answer to that.
What is that? Matt, what do you do?
Go ahead, Manny.
All I know is that I have three friends that have been vaccinated already, and the Chicago teacher friend of mine, she went on the Walgreens website, and they have a scheduling tool, and she said it's not particularly intuitive and easy to use, but you do sort of figure it out after you play around with it. And basically, she scheduled the very first available date, which was like, you know, six or seven days out from whenever she was playing around with it, and got it scheduled, and went in there and flashed her or brought her Chicago Teachers Union ID, which they never asked for. So she got it anyway. And then she said, what do I do about...
Is she over 65?
No.
No, you don't have to be a teacher.
And are teachers right now receiving preferential...
If you're like you're a nurse or anything else, if you're in any kind of...
Apparently,
a,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. And so mm-hmm. she... yeah, and then she got it, no problem. And then afterward, she said, so what about the second one? And they said, you have to go through the same process again. Just wait 10 days and then schedule the first available day. And so that's what she did. So she's fully vaccinated. I have two other friends. One's a healthcare worker who's in her 30s, and then they had extra vaccines at her office. So they said, "Bring in all your significant others. Let's vaccinate them." And so my buddy got vaccinated too. So I have three friends, none of them over 65, that have been vaccinated, but all different ways.
I would say that I've heard anecdotally that if you go by a Jewel or a Mariano's, or if you talk to them during the day, the people aren't showing up, and the stuff that, especially the Pfizer, that only has a certain shelf life. If you show up at 5 o'clock, you get vaccinated. So I mean, because they're not going to throw it out. In New York, they were throwing it out. Believe it or not,
thank God they're not throwing them out.
Yeah,
anymore.
Jeff, thank you very much. S&P futures now up 33. NASDAQ futures up 115. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.